welcome to Stir Friday. First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. We're over
Somebody
here.
Write that?
Stir Fry. No. Get it? Stir Fry. Okay, you know what? That wasn't my joke. That was Joe's joke.
Okay, let's do this.
Our floor stage manager, Joe, gave me that. I passed it off. It didn't work, so now I'm blaming him. I loved it. Anyway, you know him. You know him.
And you know her.
And you know me. Who gets you started every day?
Blum's out of work today. Her writer's out.
My God.
This is her writer right here.
Except for the bad jokes. Those then you blame anonymous floor manager.
Nope, stage manager, Joe.
Oh, my God. What are you doing on the
Mahomes
show?
Patty Mahomes says he can improve after his MVP season last year. Mm-hmm. LeBron has hit the recruiting trail where everyone knows he needs to be. But we got to start with a thrilling game in Milwaukee last night. Keyword there being start the show, as in let's run highlights, please. Game 5 between the Bucks and the Toronto Raptors. The series tied at 2. Pick it up in the fourth quarter. Kawhi Leonard from deep to give Toronto a 1-point lead. Kawhi 35 points, 15 in the fourth quarter. Under 3 to go. Tie game. Fred VanVleet, how good was he last night? Nails the 3, 21 off the bench. 30 seconds left in the game. Bucks down 3. A chance to tie right here. Malcolm Brogdon gets it in the corner, but he turns the ball over. Raptors stun the Bucks in Milwaukee, 105-99, your final. Toronto now takes a 3-2 series lead, heading back to Toronto. Here's Kawhi after the game on the message from his head coach, Nick Nurse.
He told me tonight, go get it, and, you know, I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it, and you know, this was what I work out for in the summer. So you just got to go out and shoot the ball, I guess. That's my mindset, try to get to a spot, help my team win the game.
We're not going to fold, man. Come on, man. We're best team in the league, man. We're not going to fold. We're going to go and go and give everything we got. We're not going to go there. And even they set, you know, they set a great tone and they come out and hit us in the mouth first. We can't fold. You know, we're going to come back to Milwaukee being pissed. Like, you cannot fold. You got to go out there and give everything you got. If we lose, we lose. Okay, cool. But we're not going to fold as a team, and that's not what we do.
CeCe, I got to give you credit on this one. When most of the basketball world had the Bucks as the best team and winning this one fairly easily, you said, hold on, wait till you see what the Raptors can do. How are they able to win Game 5 on the road?
Well, they win Game 5 because their coach made the best adjustment after Game 2. And that's where they were down 2-0 after losing first two games in Milwaukee. They decided, regardless of what other people feel, tremendous advantage as far as length and height, we're going to put our best player, and that's Kawhi Leonard, on Giannis. And since they were down 2-0, it has been the big difference in the series. Now, for me personally, this has been great for me to watch because I went through all this with Kawhi last year. When the whole world... Because when you have an institution like San Antonio, because they're like New England, the organization's always right. The players aren't right. They always win. But these are really talented players that they've had in their system. But Kawhi personally took an attack because people thought that he was healthy and he couldn't play. So behind the scenes, Kawhi's a very, very different person. But it hurt him. It affected him. And he worked on his game this summer, and he felt like he could be at the level that he was at before, or even better now coming to Toronto, because he felt like his offensive game had improved. So when they made this adjustment, and even though he got injured in game number 3, what he has done single-handedly, slowing down Giannis, forget the offensive productivity, but when you slow down Giannis, it gives you a chance to be in the game against Milwaukee because he facilitates so much of their offense. And his ability to be able to score the basketball, led last night by 15 points in the fourth quarter, It was phenomenal. We know Kawhi's not 100%, but to see the type of effort, to see the skill for which he plays with, man, that's what this was about. Nick Nurse, he made the adjustment of this series, and that's how I felt like they won last night's game. Depending on Kawhi Leonard, the last 3 games, Giannis has shot 33%, from the field. That's why the Raptors have the lead now, Nick.
Quickly on Nick Nurse, the other adjustment he made within the game last night was a very quick trigger on Danny Green. Danny Green, you are not you're there to hit open corner threes. Oh, you missed three of them to start the game. You don't need to play anymore. Fred VanVleet, who was a couple games ago, had made four of his last 28 shots and three of his last 23 threes. He continued to have faith in him. VanVleet was quite good in game four and was exceptional in game five. He hit seven threes last night to lead the team, lead the bench.
You know
story,
why?
I should say, with 21
Birth
points.
Birth of his baby, felt good, life is great, get out there, put on a show.
Yeah, I thought that was good for one game.
So, yeah, I mean, last night
I really
he was,
did.
Last night he was exceptional in those minutes that would have gone to Danny Green. But the story of the game is the claw. The story of the game is Kawhi Leonard. And we have known ever since there's a great moment in the 2013 finals. That's the Ray Allen finals, the finals the Spurs lost, of LeBron James, peak of his powers, LeBron James, at the free throw line, getting ready to shoot a second free throw. And he hears the horn sound because someone's checking in. And he turns over his shoulder and he sees it's Kawhi. And he goes, shrugs his shoulders a bit. Apex LeBron James saw a young, early 20s Kawhi Leonard checking into a game and said, damn it, this is about to get a lot harder. We knew the type of defender Kawhi was from that moment forward. He won a finals MVP because of that defense the following year. But what last night was fully formed, all-around greatness Kawhi Leonard. This is the first time in his career he's had 9 assists. Which I think startles some people if they don't watch that closely.
And, Nick, I got to give you credit. When we talked about the greatest players, you talked about there's one slight little hole in Kawhi's game, Chris. As far as a playmaker, he's not Harden, he's not Steph, he's not LeBron, he's not KD. He's not the passer that of those players. And I said, Nick, it's more of the system. I believe that he's going to be a worker. Like, with the basketball IQ he has and the way he plays the game, he should be a better passer. Last night, best passing game that he...
Right, because it startles people. Kawhi Leonard, 0 career triple-doubles. Well, you can't get triple-doubles if you never get 10 assists. And so it's very difficult. You're not going to get steals and blocks. And so Kawhi last night, he was great defensively, as always. He pours in 35 points, 15 in the fourth quarter, a quarter the Bucks went into the quarter leading, a game the Bucks went into the quarter leading. He was exceptional. Giannis is going to win league MVP, whether you think it should be Giannis or Harden. Everyone knows that those are the top two guys. Kawhi has outplayed him this series. He's the biggest reason the Raptors are up 3-2 after falling down 2-0.
And in case you've been living under a rock, Kawhi has played max minutes. Kawhi is exhausted. Kawhi is playing on two legs that have really been bothering him. I mean, this is a guy who has really carried this team on the even on the nights that he doesn't have. If you look to the other side, Chris, you said something interesting yesterday. You said it seemed like the Bucks are resting on their laurels of the regular season. Yeah, but we were so good in the regular season. Don't worry, we got this. You talked about the difference between this is now the postseason. It's a different beast, and maybe experience is a factor. Maybe the Bucks just assumed they were going to win last night, came out, and couldn't handle Kawhi.
Nick talked about when this series began, can this team get to the NBA Finals with skipping a step? And to me, that step is part of experience. I don't like to give athletes or teams credit for things they have not done. Now, I know Coach Bud, like, I'm not going to say this is the Atlanta team because they're so much more talented. And we know with LeBron being in the East at that time, it's a total different thing. But the Bucks have to be able to prove it. They have to validate those 60 wins in the postseason. And the postseason play is so different. I didn't know Bledsoe was going to average half the points in the playoffs. Like, you don't know that. Defenses play you different. Giannis with the physical contact. Like, he's still been able to be good, but he hadn't been able to be the regular season Giannis. Like, so all these things that you haven't seen a team do before in the postseason, chemistry. How are they going to gel after a loss? What are they going to do if they happen to lose 2 or 3 in a row? It's the first time that we've able to seen it. So it's not as if I was right. I just don't count it. Young teams, experience, the teams that don't have it, it's not that important. But you can see it's hard to get to the finals without going through struggles like this. Now, this could be the struggle to get them over the top.
Well, that's right. And this could be that they could still skip that step. This series, I know it's 3-2 Toronto. Here's where we're at. Through five games, these two teams have scored an identical amount of points. Through five games, the Raptors have won a blowout. The Bucks have won a blowout. The Raptors have won a game. The Bucks led going into the fourth. The Bucks have won a game. The Raptors led going into the fourth. And then there was a double overtime game. The double overtime game, Toronto won. That's the difference between them being up 3-2 and down 3-2. Any game that goes to overtime, single or double. So, I think Milwaukee is still very live. I think Milwaukee is – they wanted to win last night's game. Some would say they needed to win last night's game. But they're a win on Saturday away from having home game seven to go to the NBA Finals. But there's the first three-game losing streak in 15 months. And so we will see how they deal with that, because it's something this group with this coach has not dealt with.
That's an amazing stat, the numbers being equal as far as points. But the difference is Kawhi Leonard.
He's been the best player.
As he said, this moment is not too big for me. I worked out all summer for this. Now, Giannis has worked on his game. It's come, man, his game has improved so much. But if he can't shoot a 5 to 12-foot jump shot, because they are going to make a wall in the lane against him, and that's the difference in these players' development at this stage of their career. Kawhi a little bit older, and now he's got a complete game, and it was on full display last night.
All right, good stuff. Sarah Kustak will be out here in a little bit. We'll discuss more of this, but coming up, did Klay Thompson get robbed by the all-NBA voters? Hear it from him next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll get to Klay Thompson in a second, but first, some highlights presented by Hilton. Get a price match guarantee when you book at Hilton.com. Bucks, Raptors game 5, Eric Bledsoe to Giannis in transition with the alley-oop.
This is when things were going well for Milwaukee. Eric Bledsoe played the best game he's played of this series by far. Giannis was getting out and running, doing that Kobe Bryant underbite kind of snarl on the way up the court. But things slowed down dramatically in the fourth quarter, and that spelled doom for Milwaukee. But this is more of the good stuff.
More from Giannis this time, driving to the hoop, dunks on Danny Green like he isn't even there.
Huge play right before halftime. These are some of the things that Giannis has to be able to do. He initiated the contact on this one compared to typically what they've been chesting him up with Kawhi, Siakam, Gasol. It's been a tough series for Giannis to get all the way to the rack.
And Giannis didn't hit his free throws, and he's clearly a little rattled about that.
More from the game. Pascal Siakam sends Malcolm Brogdon's layup attempt out of bounds.
Nick, you were waiting on Siakam to re-enter the playoff series. Man, he was huge in last night's win.
Rebounding and defense in particular. His offense going to suffer in this series because he has such a tough defensive matchup, but he's giving you all the energy.
All right, moving on to the Warriors. They're waiting to see who they'll face in the finals. One of the reasons they're in the finals, their fifth straight, mind you, is Klay Thompson. But when all NBA teams were announced yesterday, Thompson did not make the first, second, or third team. Keep in mind, because of this exclusion, he is now not eligible for the Supermax deal, a difference of about $30 million. Here's Klay getting the news yesterday.
Clearly made the All-NBA team, which would have elevated your potential.
Oh, I did? They already came out?
Yeah, it came out today. You were, like, right behind Beal. We got, or no, right behind, who got third team? Kyrie. But you barely, yeah, Kemba. Kemba got it. You were a couple.
I mean, that's cool and all, but, like, when you go to five straight finals, I respect those guys, but holy, when you go to five straight, I mean, it takes more than just a couple All-NBA guys. It's like an all-time team, but whatever. That's not. I'd rather win a championship and be third team on NBA. So it's all good.
Do you not like that affects potential contract statuses? You know, all NBA stuff, because that would have elevated you.
Yeah. It is what it is. You know, I can't control it. Do I think there's that many guards better than me in the league? No, but. That's the reason why we're still playing, so I don't even want to get into it, honestly.
You wonder if these are the perils of playing for the Golden State Warriors, where they're just stacked up and down, and a player as good as Klay Thompson can shockingly get lost. Has Klay become underrated almost?
I mean, I don't think he's become underrated by smart basketball people. I don't think he's become underrated by anyone on this show, the people we have on the show, the people we talk basketball with. But he also wasn't snubbed. He was not one of the 6 best guards in basketball this year in the regular season. The hardest spot to slot on this year's All-NBA team was that final guard spot. Kimba had a strong case, Bradley Beal had a strong case, and Klay had a strong case. Had he made it, it wouldn't have been ridiculous that he made it, but he did not have an overwhelming case. You know the last time Klay Thompson made an All-NBA team? The last year they didn't have Kevin Durant. He made it in 15.
Yes.
He made it in 16. And now he has less of a responsibility, and people, they only look at it from this perspective. Well, what would Klay's numbers be if he got the opportunities Kimba does in Charlotte? Okay, sure. But the counterfactual, the counterargument to that is, what would Klay's numbers be if every game he played, he was the other team's number one goal was to stop him, like it is for Kimba? We can't answer those questions. And in life, you can't have everything, typically. Mm-hmm. He gets the winning. He gets the glory of the 5 straight trips to the finals.
And you might believe he's a better player.
Right.
But that's not what we're judging here. You're actually judging it on the season. And regardless, the Golden State, they've been outstanding. Recently, without Kevin Durant, 5-0. But let's go back to the regular season, because people forget quickly. They were not great during the regular season.
They underachieved again.
They underachieved. And now, with Toronto having the lead, Nick, you brought out a great point this morning. Man, they wish that if one more win for Golden State, and then they have home court if Toronto wins. They finish with 57 wins. So
Toronto has 58. So now either way, they're starting the finals on the road, and that has to do with it. Like these things.
Has a lot to do with it.
If they have won 68 games, then Klay, even if his individual numbers are lower, then maybe he makes it.
On a team that potentially won 20-something games, there might be a team that has 3 players that are all NBA. Because let's not forget, he does have a teammate on first team in Steph. He does have a teammate in Durant on second team. So now they only won 57 games. What did they do that they would warrant first, second, and third team? No. In years past, yes. They were worthy of that, but not in this season. So even though Klay, great soundbite and everything, it seems like the natural thing, I could make a case for Bradley Beal, what he went through there in Washington, losing John Wall and everything they went through as a team, on and off the court. He was outstanding. Kimba was outstanding. So I'm like Nick as far as I don't believe that Klay was snubbed. I believe that almost every player on Golden State is underappreciated. And it starts with Steph, Draymond, Klay, KD, Boogie. They just added him. But all of those players, because they're so good together, and that's just all a part of being on Golden State.
Nick, talk a little bit about the financial implications for Klay Thompson and what this means when you were left off the All-NBA team.
I mean, it's $30 million. If assuming Golden State was going to say to Klay Thompson to keep him, we will give you the most money we possibly can. Had he made the All-NBA team, that's 5 years, $220 million.
That's because it's tied into making the
Absolutely. All-NBA. And since he's not, it's 5 years, $190 million. And so another big point of discussion today will be, should these contracts be tied to these awards? Now, the media that I've talked to that actually has a vote, I don't have a vote, says we don't want this responsibility. But the NBA and the NBA Players Association came together and said, we have to find a way to reward our best of the best. An All-NBA team is the best way to do it. There are 100 voters, see. They cast 15 votes each. 1,500 votes essentially were cast in total. There were 2 that were indefensible. Dwayne Wade got a second-team All-NBA vote. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
And Marvin Bagley III got a third-team All-NBA vote. I really think that person thought he was voting, like, for a third all-rookie team that doesn't exist. Those were the only 2 votes that are indefensible. You want to argue that Embiid should have been first-team over Jokic? You can get in the weeds there. That Aldridge should have been on the team? You can get in the weeds there. The media did a great job with this. And this is the system the players and the league have decided they want in place.
And when the players decided this with the union and the league, it was more generally meant to be like a bribe, to be able to bribe the players so potentially they could stay with the team that they made all NBA with. It was a reward for their play. So you make a tremendous point as far as the media and this, as far as voting. Some of those Pro Bowls, things like that, they're very questionable. This right here, they do have a high level of integrity. Only 2 votes there that were questionable. But this is part of the players agreed to this, and I believe it's a good system.
And Klay, by the way, this is the worst year he's had in 5 years. His shooting percentage was the lowest. His three-point percentage was the lowest. And he's a great defensive player. This is the worst Golden State defense we've seen in this five-year run. This was not the year to argue Klay got snubbed. It feels bad for him because this is the year he could have got $30 extra million had he made the team.
All right, good stuff. Take a break. Coming up, are the Lakers already in danger of striking out on free agency? That's next on First.
Poor Lakers, man. The clock started early on this.
This weekend, NASCAR comes home to Charlotte with 600 miles of wheel-to-wheel action. The Coca-Cola 600, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on Fox. Time for us to go viral. It's going to make you happy. Sponsored by TGI Fridays. Choose two meats plus two sides for only $14.99. So yesterday, we fell victim to the newest Snapchat baby face filter. And, Nick, you're adorable.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The NFL on Fox team followed suit, posting this picture of Michael Strahan, Jimmy Johnson, Terry Bradshaw, Jake Glazer, Howie Long, and Kurt Menefee, all with the baby face phenomenal filter.
This is on our big screens behind us. It made Jenna, I don't know if you heard at the very beginning of the Coca-Cola 600 read, audibly gasp when she saw. Jay Glazer doesn't look like Jay Glazer. Like, that's the baby face. I almost didn't realize who that was. The Jimmy Johnson one
is
it
tremendous.
Might be the best one of them all. A baby Jimmy Johnson. Because that's how I like to imagine a baby Jimmy Johnson actually looked with the hair like that.
Yeah, Howie's been like that. He came out of the womb with a crew cut, bro. I'm telling you, and glasses.
Wait, I got to just say, for anyone that didn't watch yesterday, can you come over here and look at CeCe and Nick?
CeCe, as a baby, evidently wore eyeshadow.
Looks adorable.
We didn't know that CeCe wore purple eyeshadow.
I got some youth pictures. I'm going to tell you something. I was a rough little kid. Well, I did not look like... I was headed to success. No.
Nick came out of the womb already with a take. He came out and he's like, and another thing, hold on. Yeah, I got to tell you something.
Looked like I could be a little lawyer right there.
It's good stuff.
That's what everyone always thought I was going to be.
It's a win for Snapchat.
Lawyer or used car salesman.
No, you're about right in between.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Time for your AT&T wake-up call. Raptors beat the Bucks in Game 5 to take a 3-2 series lead. Kawhi Leonard was seemingly unbothered by his nagging leg injuries. 35 points, 15 in the fourth quarter. Also added on 7 rebounds in a career-high, 9 assists. See, is Kawhi making his case for best player in the NBA?
Well, he's playing some of the best basketball. It's refreshing to be able to see. And his game has just developed so much. His playmaking, you talk about the 9 assists. What about, Jenna, all 9 of those assists happen to be three-pointers? If they don't do that, I don't believe they win last night's game. So, yeah, he's going to be in the conversation. Him, Steph, KD, LBJ.
This has been so much fun. Like, just think about from the start of this season to right now, the progression of who the narrative has been behind for best player. Started the season with LeBron. Harden went on his insane 30-point streak.
Yeah.
He took it. Giannis going to win MVP. His team starts the playoffs 10-1. He took the lead. Durant during the playoffs, 39-5-5 over stretch. He takes it.
I'm Kevin Durant.
Then Steph is like, no, it's actually me. And now over the last week, no, it's actually Kawhi. Those six guys all at various points making their case.
Kawhi reached a claw in there and grabbed that trophy. And
he's certainly right now trying to.
The All-NBA teams were announced. Here we go. First team, Giannis, Harden, Steph, Paul George, Nikola Jokic. The second team, Joel Embiid, KD, Dame Lillard, Kawhi, and Kyrie. And third team, Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin, Rudy Gobert, Kemba Walker, and LeBron James. LeBron, by the way, his 11-year run on the first team comes to an end. Notably absent from all three teams, Klay Thompson. Nick, did they get this right?
NBA media did an exceptional job with this. There was going to be Beal, Kemba, Klay. Two of those three were going to be odd man out. It ended up being Beal and Klay. And then at the forward spot, LaMarcus Aldridge, you could make a case for him. It was going to be a tough case. You're going to have to leave off either Blake or LeBron. LeBron, his streak does get snapped. He does, however, tie Kareem and Kobe for the most overall All-NBA selections. I've been campaigning for a vote, see? I don't know whose vote they're going to take away because the folks who did this did a great job on this.
Well, try to be a little bit nicer. But, yeah, you're right. LeBron streak 11 straight first team. An amazing streak was broken, but they did get it right. Those guys at the bottom, especially as far as the guards, Kemba, and we talk about
Bradley Beal.
Look how many games did they win compared to Klay. So the people that want to argue for Klay, do you want a winner or do you want guys that had outstanding seasons, even though their team didn't have outstanding seasons? That would be the argument.
Correct.
All right, finally, this is a crucial offseason for the Lakers, one in which they will desperately need to land a second superstar to have any chance of righting this ship that has seemingly gone off course. According to Brian Windhorst, LeBron has already been active this offseason, trying to recruit Kawhi and Jimmy Butler, and he's been in touch with Kyrie. Nick, Kawhi and Kyrie would mean a successful offseason for L.A., but what about Jimmy Butler?
Jimmy Butler's been the one that I have been the most skeptical about. Not about their ability to land him, but if I'm tiering these guys, we know obviously Kawhi and KD are in this top tier, and then Kyrie and Klay, I would say, are in this next tier. But of that third tier, my guy was another K, was Kemba Walker. I think we have seen a player similar to him in Kyrie Irving fit seamlessly with LeBron. Jimmy Butler, prior to this postseason, I thought anybody maxing him out would be making a mistake. Now, in the postseason, he was really good, and he showed his value on both ends. He showed his ability as a closer, and he showed that he can elevate his game. But sometimes, as Mark Schlereth says in maybe a better way than I'm going to say right here, when it smells everywhere you go, maybe you're the one that stinks. Jimmy Butler has a bit of a track record of being a tough teammate. Mm-hmm. And I do worry about Jimmy Butler, who's been the dominant personality on his teams since he became Jimmy Butler, since he developed into that player, his ability to meld with LeBron. And for the Lakers, LeBron, obviously, at this point in his career, has to go in a certain gear during the regular season. Is Jimmy Butler ready to go in full gear during the regular season to carry that load? Those are real questions I would have. It's better than nothing. But to me, Jimmy Butler is the tail end of that third tier, and it would mean, in my eyes, the Lakers struck out on much better options.
I like Jimmy Butler as a player. Jimmy Butler does present a number of challenges. One, at this age, how long is he going to be able to play that style? So if you do sign Jimmy Butler, especially with someone LeBron with his age, you have to understand those couple. It's like a Chris Paul deal. Those last couple years of them contracts, you're not going to be getting the value on your dollar for the type of player that you sign. And when Magic Johnson and them a couple years ago started clearing up all this salary cap space, and it was like legitimately they visualized getting LeBron James and someone else. If you tell them now, fast forward, it's LeBron and Jimmy Butler. A lot of people are going to be disappointed. LeBron James and his camp, they should be disappointed. But they need to prepare themselves for a plan B and a plan C, because L.A. is just not the destination that it used to be. And what's happened this offseason, to me, has just made it even more clear that, man, the Clippers are really viable in the same building. Without the chaos. Man, going to New York. If Kawhi's not going to go to L.A., if he wants to stay in North America, why wouldn't he stay in a bigger city in New York compared to Toronto? So I just believe everything that's going on, I believe it's going to be a tough offseason for the Lakers.
Plan B and C is not generally something that's in the Lakers' cards, as we've seen the last couple of months. But if you put all that aside, do we feel a little more comfortable that at least now we're seeing that LeBron is taking a proactive role, or reportedly taking a proactive role in recruiting, when we weren't sure what was going to be and who was going to lead that?
I think I said this yesterday. I never believed the idea that LeBron was going to sit this out. This is part of the job for LeBron.
Yes.
The coaching search is not part of the job. Filling out the roster as far as what the Lance Stevenson roles, that's not part of his job. When you are a player of his caliber, calling up the other guys of that near that caliber, the guys who you could have as your number two, that is part of the job. And the players we have seen in the past, when LeBron was leaving Cleveland the first time, Derrick Rose didn't want to pick up the phone to recruit him to Chicago. And Derrick Rose was criticized for that. It is the NBA superstar's job to be part of the recruitment. I never thought LeBron was going to sit this out.
And it's such a small network now. You know, Chris Broussard might not have KD's number, but LeBron, he's got his number and everyone else's number. LeBron would be naive to idiotic if he wasn't making these phone calls, because the other players are talking. Other NBA executives are ready. If Kevin Durant says, all right, I want a guy, I want Kyrie Irving, all right, you can believe that these conversations have already taken place. Free agency doesn't start July 1st, June 30th. No, free agency starts whenever the player, because there is no tampering with the players. They can communicate all the time.
I'm going to go back to something I said, and a lot of people thought I was just pulling it out of thin air back in October. And then it started gaining some momentum. The Lakers' best chance at an elite free agent is Kyrie Irving. Does not mean they will get him and does not mean they are the favorite for him, but their best chance at a difference maker is Kyrie Irving, and that door was reopened on that phone call with things that have not necessarily been publicly talked about. That is, I don't know where Kyrie's going to go, and I don't know how heavy of a hand his dad's going to have in it, but the Lakers' best option is a guy who's played with LeBron before, and it's Kyrie Irving.
All right, let's move on to the NBA Finals. They get underway Thursday night. It'll be the Warriors against whoever remains standing in the East. Golden State will have had 9 days off, but that's still not enough to get Kevin Durant back on the court. KD likely to miss the beginning of the finals with that strained calf. See, do the Warriors need KD to win a title?
They're a better basketball team. They're more dangerous. They present more problems. There's numbers out there that say, man, they can win a series. All they got to win is 4 games. Knicks got a sample size. I mean, more than a sample size as far as playing without him. I know the Warriors would prefer to have him, but they have the luxury, greatest luxury in the history of sports, and that's Kevin Durant. They can win without him. I haven't seen an NBA team with their best player down that they even had the real opportunity. It was different when Magic and Kareem. Magic was emerging, Kareem, and you're talking about one game.
Or Willis Reed, the famous Willis Reed game. Yeah. He gave you 4 points but was out after that. That was one game.
And you're not – we're talking about a series. And the way the basketball is being played in the East, because LeBron, man, didn't have a full deck. He did not have a full arsenal to go against Golden State. I believe both these teams – in the East are a lot better than the teams they faced in the West, especially from a defensive standpoint, and will present some problems. But there's still no answer on either team with Giannis and Kawhi being top 5 players for KD. So, yes, they can win without him. That's how good this team it would be, but I agree with Nick. You're talking about a luxury. That's who Kevin Durant is for Golden State.
Kevin Durant's been on the Warriors for 3 years. They needed him. They had to have him. They would have lost without him. One series. The first NBA Finals, he was there against the defending champion Cavs. That was the best Cavs team. That was LeBron James still at the peak of his powers. Kyrie Irving playing the best basketball of his career up to that point. A healthy Kevin Love and a Cavs team that was a top 10 all-time NBA offense. The difference in that series, because that Cavs team had figured out a way to slow down Steph and Klay. That Cavs team would have beaten the Warriors without Kevin Durant. Other than that, it's all been luxury. Even the 7-game series with Houston last year, we have seen against Houston, Golden State plays different with Kevin Durant, but not necessarily better. Houston has trouble with the original Warriors Splash Brothers. And so, do they need him to win the finals? No. Can they win without him? Yes. And anyone right now that will say, no, they are drawing dead. Against Milwaukee or Toronto without Kevin Durant, they're just saying that because they boxed themselves in. That nobody can have watched the last 5.5 games of them without him. The 35 games previously they played without him with Steph. Their 34-4 record overall, so I guess it would have been 33 games previously, and say, oh, they have to have him. They'd like to have him. They can. What they can't have happen now without him is Draymond go down for a game. Mm-hmm. Steph, they can't suffer any more injuries.
What about the fact that Boogie might be coming back? Does that affect?
I believe that they're better with Boogie. I believe it is a bonus because they're playing 10, 11 players now. Boogie Cousins, 10 or 15 minutes, yes. And I was told by someone close to the situation that Boogie Cousins last weekend, Boogie Cousins would be back before Kevin Durant. So, yes, if they're going to run a rotation of 10 or 11 guys, I'm going to get Boogie Cousins some minutes.
And the KD, people, here's what happened with the KD injury. Because in the broadcast, Reggie, unfortunately, assigned him a torn Achilles. The moment it happened, Reggie Miller's like, that's a popped Achilles, and we were all writing the KD moratorium. Once we found out it wasn't a popped Achilles, the general sentiment was, oh, he's fine. He'll be back in a week. He was never going to be back in a week.
No.
You could see when he walked off the court how significant the injury was. You could see the fact that he didn't return to the bench that game, how significant the injury was. When they ruled him out preemptively for games 3 and 4 against Portland, how significant the injury was. Now, if the NBA Finals goes 7, we're now talking game 7 will be on Father's Day, I think June 16th. That's a ways away. I'm not saying I believe KD's done for the year, but I don't think anyone should have ever expected him to be back for game one of the NBA Finals. And the Warriors have been preparing to not have him for at least the beginning of the NBA Finals. They know this as well as anybody.
And this is normal for the scope of recovery time for a calf strain at his severity, right?
Well, typically, because he's had a couple other calf strains, he came back earlier than this. So it's more severe. The team revealed that. Oh, it was more severe than we anticipated.
Yeah.
But when you think something and you think the worst, you think to pop the Achilles and been like, oh, I'm looking at the MRI. The Achilles is not torn.
Right.
That's great news. Well, in a certain respect, it is great news. But a strained calf at late in May is not good. He has not returned to basketball activity. So for me, it's going to take some time, at least 5 to 7 days, to return to basketball activity. And then after basketball activity, it's going to take 5 to 7 days for me. So the Kevin Durant that got injured, even if he comes back for 2 or 3 games, he will not be the same.
And real quick on this before we move on, I would not feel this way if it was Steph that was out. If it was Steph that went out against Houston and we were asking this question, are the Warriors, can they still win a championship? I don't think they would have swept Portland. So there's a lot of talk, who's better, who's better. Okay, you can define better in a vacuum of if they didn't both play for the same team. When you play for the same team, it's who's better and who's more important end up becoming the same thing,
right?
If you're trying to win. The Warriors could not do what they just did to Portland without Steph Curry. We just saw them do it without Kevin Durant.
And then a quick note on Boogie Cousins. He did practice with the team. Steve Kerr is just worried about his stamina now, but it's great to see that his legs are holding up, whatever, and he's out there and he's actually playing with them. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, did Kawhi Leonard just make his best case for best player in the NBA? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. We're now joined by FS1 NBA analyst Sarah Kustoff.
What's up, Sarah?
How are you?
Good to see you.
Bad influence on her. Yes. Now we got to eat donuts
said,
and everything.
I was so impressed you ate some donuts.
Her girlish figure.
That I what? Ate some donuts.
You ate one bite of a donut?
Yes.
I was sitting there the whole. I watch you guys every morning.
As well,
of course,
you should.
And I'm looking at this.
Go ahead.
I'm looking at this. CC thinks I'm lying. I'm totally serious.
But
I was looking at the entire box of donuts sitting there, and I was like, how are you all focused talking to one another about whatever it is you were talking about not eating the donuts?
Raptors.
We did.
That's how.
Absolutely. And Jenna, it was easy for her to say no because that yesterday was the first time she's ever tasted a donut.
That is
so,
not
I mean,
true,
it was.
Nick.
I'm just talking about your own words, Jenna.
Okay.
Your own words.
I just couldn't remember the last time. Nick polished off the rest of the donuts. The offseason, Sarah Kustoff, came early for the Houston Rockets, at least earlier than they would have liked. They lost in 6 to the Warriors in the Western Conference semifinals. After the game, CP3 and Harden reportedly had an exchange of words in the locker room concerning the Rockets' offense and concerning ball movement. Paul reportedly had passionate discussions with head coach Mike D'Antoni throughout the season, expressing his concerns about Houston's offense. Sarah, what do you make of all this, and did it affect what we ended up seeing at the end of the season?
Well, frankly, I'm surprised that we didn't see some of this sooner. I mean, considering the fact we had so much dialogue and the narrative about do we aesthetically like how James Harden plays? We know how efficient he is. We know how he's able to score in isolation. But as a player, that's, if you're a teammate, not necessarily a fun brand of basketball to say you guys spread out, you stay in the corners, be ready for a kick out. There was not a whole lot of touches on the ball. Houston last in the league in assist percentage. And a lot of the things that you see in watching players finding joy in how they play is because of ball movement. And so I think with Chris Paul, we understand the talents and the success he's had throughout the course of his career and what he does predicated on the pass and on finding teammates. And so I don't know what they do from here, but I think there's a lot of serious questions because it's not only about the roster, it's not only about personnel, but it is about does this style find success and get you to where you want to go when you're playing in the postseason.
I think they found the style by accident, though. I don't think the coach... I don't think the organization, when they set out, even with James Harden and Chris Paul, to play together, that Harden would have the ball as much as he did. Right. It evolved into this because last year in the playoffs, Chris Paul, they felt like at this age, he got worn out. That's why his hamstring went on him. So they were like, if we had Chris Paul back. So now you know what their goal was this year? It wasn't to win games. It was to get to the playoffs with Chris Paul being healthy. So in doing that, James Harden started holding the ball a little bit more, controlling the offense. And then James Harden, because his commitment to his body, he got hot in a way that system just mushroomed because he was thriving in it. No one had ever seen Houston play that way before. So in trying to preserve Chris Paul's body to get him to the playoffs, they created this monster in James Harden having one of the best offensive seasons that we ever seen. Now, when they were playing that way, no one had calculated, can you win games like that in the playoffs?
Especially because, see, they were, you say at the beginning of the year it wasn't about winning games. When they were 11-14 with Capella hurt, with Chris Paul,
I mean, they
hurt,
were just trying to survive.
Right. At that point, it became about survival, and then they started thriving. They had the best record in the NBA post All-Star break, or the best record in the Western Conference. They were playing at a super high level that way.
As was Harden, who was unbelievable.
Right. I said Harden would have gotten my fake MVP vote. He's probably going to finish second in the MVP voting that we're going to find out here in a few weeks. So I think it became out of necessity because it wasn't a drastically different style than what they had played the year before. It was that style on steroids. It was that style taken to its furthest logical conclusion of, well, if it's good 30% of the time, what about 50% of the time? Mm-hmm. But I have a... Now, I think heated exchange can be taken a number of different ways. From what I understand, this was not a falling out of players. This was frustration between two guys that lost a game that nobody thought they were going to lose. Nobody thought the people might have thought they were going to lose the Warriors. They didn't think they were going to lose that game. Game six in Houston, right. 8-point favorites, no Kevin Durant, all of that. And so, but Chris Paul has to take some ownership on this. Game five was a golden opportunity in that series, and he was terrible. He was not good in that series until Game 6. Additionally, Chris Paul was not traded to Houston with a 5-year contract. He was traded to Houston with 1 year left on his deal. And he signed, he took that money, and God bless him for taking that money, to play next to James Harden, knowing you were going to get at least a version of this. Maybe not as extreme as it got, but a version of this. And up until the end of Game 5 of the Western Conference semifinals, it had led to winning. It had led to them dominating in the first round, climbing all the way to where they were almost the 2 seed in the West until the final 2 days of the season, and being tied 2 games apiece against Golden State, feeling like they could have won Game 1. So I understand Chris Paul's frustration because the clock is ticking on him as far as his ability to finally make an NBA Finals. But I think it's a little revisionist history to act as if the reason the Rockets didn't advance was on James Harden, as opposed to the reason they got even close to where they were was because of James
Harden. I will agree with that 100%. I also think we know Chris Paul, the competitor he is. I don't, to your point, think you read that much into the fact that they lost. The season ended. You would expect this. You would hope for this. The guys would be upset, and I think both of those guys are very close with one another. So in many cases, you feel comfortable airing some of your issues that you feel like you need to improve upon. But I do think just the bigger picture for this Houston team is, what do they do going forward? Because I think Daryl Morey did an extraordinary job in recalibrating the roster, making some changes, whether it was throughout the course of the season or heading into the season. I mean, going into the season, I never would have told you I thought Houston would be better this past season than they were the previous one. And they were a better group in how they played. Now it's just about, do you entirely retool the way in which you play?
Well, they also understand that Chris Paul, he can only play so much defense. He's not the great defender that he was. He is not the dominant scorer that he was. He's not the playmaker that he was. So there's a certain amount of his reality at this stage of his career. The last 2 years, he's missed 2 great opportunities against the Warriors, which I believe is him and Harden's worst matchup, going against Steph and Klay, because they exhaust you on the defensive end. And they have had success, Steph and Klay, going against Harden and Chris Paul. So Daryl Morey, I got a lot of confidence in him, but, man, he's going to have to do an amazing job, better than the one he did last year, because last year he did a great job getting them back to this point.
Wait, you don't think they're close? You don't think they've come closer than any other team?
Oh, they've come closer than any other team.
Not a whole retool?
No, well, I think at this point there's a bit of a mental block against this basketball team. When you're up 3-2 and, you're up 15 in Game 6 and you lose, and then you're up 15 at home in Game 7 and you miss 27 straight threes and you lose, and then you get the gift, the ostensible gift of a Kevin Durant injury, and then all of a sudden you blow that fourth quarter, which was an opportunity to go up 3-2 again, and then you have a Game 6 at home, and you blow that game, even though you have a lead, I believe, going into the fourth quarter. There's an element of, man, we just can't. And sports, a lot of sports are psychological. An element of, we just can't beat these guys. But I'm going to say a name that won't come up on most of these conversations. That was a much bigger problem for the Rockets in this series than their highest paid player, James Harden, or their second highest paid player, Chris Paul. The third guy they near maxed out, Clint Capella. They paid Clint Capella on what he was showing he would be after the 2018 season. He was miserable in their biggest series of the year. Mm-hmm. The Rockets don't have a lot of room to retool. They don't have a lot of cap space. Daryl always tries to stay flexible, but they don't have a lot of super tradable assets aside from their own picks, and those will be late picks. What they need is Clint Capella to be the player they think he can be, which he was not in that series. That was as big of a reason they lost as any.
All right, Sarah, stick around. Coming up, how did the Raptors stun the Bucks? Next on First Things First.
Whew, that was a game last night.
Man.
Kustak, stick around. We're going to work you today.
Back here with Sarah Kustak, and we are going viral. Sponsored by TGI Fridays. Choose two meats plus two sides for only $14.99. Drake was at Jurassic Park in Toronto last night to watch the Raptors take down the Bucks in Game 5. Say he was fired up after the win. Bit of an understatement.
Listen, we have the best player, we have the best fans in the whole NBA, in the whole world. Look around you. Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. Look around at the square. I promise you right now, we did this. Doesn't matter what anybody says. They can say it's disrespectful. They can say it's this and that and that. Everybody's within the rules. Everybody's doing their thing. All we are is proud and passionate. We are like a college sports team. The Toronto Raptors are a college sports team, I promise you. I love Toronto. I love this team, and we're going to the NBA.
Fan. You know what the problem with Drake is?
Everything.
What?
And he's just a cornball.
He's just understated.
Tell me you don't like him as a rapper.
As a rapper, sure. As a singer, when he's whining about my life so hard, I don't know which of these strip club to go to tonight. And they say they love me, but they don't love me, and I don't know. Listen, Drake. Yeah, I liked you a lot more when you were the kid in the wheelchair in Degrassi. I'm happy you've had all this success. But listen,
that's a voice of a hater. It just happens to be your voice.
Oh, I'm hating. 100%. Hate. Player haters ball. No problem. Even if you're rooting for the Raptors.
His opinion.
I'm here for all this.
Let's have the Bucks win game 6 just so we can see Drake sad on the sideline because he ain't going to go to game 7. Don't do no road games for Drake. No, Spike Lee can do the road games. The real fans do the road games. Drake might forget what jersey he's supposed to wear if he does one of the road games. Might wear his Laker jersey. Might wear his Kentucky jersey.
What? Kustak, do you have a Drake experience? Because I know you cover the league. You've been to Toronto.
Careful. Phrasing.
Yes. An experience seeing Drake at one of these games. Correct. Yeah. No, it is. Careful phrasing. I'm glad you said that.
Hey,
Drake
man.
Also, no, he didn't. He
hey, I'm
no,
here for it. Like you told me.
No, I'm here for it, sir. The way he harassed Doris
let
Burke.
Me know.
Everyone forgot that.
Okay.
Everyone forgot when he was all creepy with Doris Burke. Yeah, we can talk, but you got to come over to my house. What are you doing, man?
I think we need to just bring it back just a second.
My wife gets mad at me every time she says this. She's like, Nick, one day. Drake. You might actually meet Drake. I don't care if I meet Drake one day.
He's
embarrassing. Sit down and watch the games. There ain't no college.
He's a fan like you.
I didn't know. What?
I don't act like this.
A game.
I don't act like this. Michael Rapport tried to put a broom in my face. I told him to something, but that's the that was before the game. That was the only game, and that was before the game.
That's the first time I heard you stutter.
Mm-hmm. Enough, Drake.
All right, you good? Did you get it out? Is there anything left?
I don't know. I don't know. We're good for now.
I think Kustak could add
my coffee.
I took your coffee away. I'm done with the caffeine, Nick. I sit next to you every day.
Learn from Beyonce or Jay-Z or Rihanna or Denzel or the wildly talented famous people who sit at the games and conduct themselves with a measure of dignity and respect.
I think we missed a good story.
We got to go. Let's see how it all went down in Game 5 between the Raptors and Bucks. You can have your coffee back. Settle it down. Have some decaf. Pick it up in the fourth. Kawhi from deep. That gave Toronto a one-point lead. 35 points for Kawhi, 15 in the fourth. Thunder, 3 minutes to go now. Tie game. Fred Van Fleet nails the three. 21 off the bench for Fred. 30 seconds left now. Bucks trailing by 3. A chance to tie. Malcolm Brogdon gets it in the corner and turns the ball over. Raptors stun the Bucks in Milwaukee, 105-99. They now take a 3-2 series lead heading back to Toronto. Here's Kawhi after the game on the message from his head coach, Nick Nurse.
He told me tonight, go get it. And, you know, I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it. And, you know, this was what I work out for in the summer. So you just got to go out and shoot the ball, I guess. That's my mindset, try to get to a spot, help my team win the game. just trying to win, either if it's me scoring points or getting my teammates wide open look. Just out there trying to win. It just not really matter about me scoring. It's just about being aggressive and don't shy away from anything.
Can you imagine if they lost? What his energy would be? I mean, that's him as excited as it gets. All right, Sarah, how did the Raptors win Game 5 on the road?
There's a whole list we could put together, but that guy right there was absolutely masterful. And Kawhi Leonard, don't be fooled by his disposition, the energy that he comes off with. He will rip your heart out. And he did it on both ends of the court. His fingerprints were on every single aspect of the game. And before we go down to what the Raptors did, because it was led by Kawhi, but also a team effort, I thought Nick Nurse did an excellent job, too, with some of the adjustments that he made. But the fourth quarter, Kawhi Leonard came out, and he had 15 points in that fourth quarter, but the aggressiveness and assertiveness that he came out to start that quarter, I think, entirely changed the complexion of what the Raptors were able to do. But whether it was a rebound, whether it was picking up a foul, knocking down free throws, the defense that he played on Giannis, was it a collective effort? Yes, but he was just extraordinary. More than anything, though, with Toronto, I think we often talk about teams generating offense out of their defense. I think for Toronto, what switched when they were fighting back from that deficit was that their offense helped their defense. They started taking better shots. They were knocking down shots. That took Milwaukee out of the break, out of getting some of those easy transition points. And Toronto's half-court defense is deadly. Milwaukee was unable to score against that, had so much trouble finding ways to put up points because of it. And I think just in a collective effort by Toronto, they just did a beautiful job of pulling that game out.
In this series, Milwaukee's offense against Toronto in the half court is scoring about 80 points per 100 possessions. The league worst offense in the league is about 101 per 100 possessions. So in the half court, Toronto's defense has been, as you put it, masterful. It's been spectacular. And Kawhi, yesterday, I want to give Nick Nurse credit for two things. One, he recognized very early this isn't Danny Green's game, probably not his series.
Great point.
Quick trigger. Yeah. They were outscored by 17 points in the 15 minutes he played. That means in the 33 minutes he didn't, they outscored Milwaukee by 23. So he had a quick trigger with him. And the other thing he was able to do, even though this was a game Milwaukee led for the lion's share of the first three quarters, Kawhi only played 28 of the first 36 minutes, not 33 of the first 36 minutes, not 32 of the first 36 minutes. What did that allow him? To start the fourth quarter fresh, play the entire quarter, and he had 10 points within the first 5 minutes of that fourth quarter, and then he didn't ice it with some free throws, but he hit some free throws late, and his defense has been Kawhi Leonard level, which is, I believe, the best perimeter defender we've had in this league since Scottie Pippen, all series long. I don't think Giannis has been bad. I think Giannis has been stopped. I think Giannis has dealt with Kawhi and company. And the other last point I'll make on Kawhi is 9 assists, we've never seen it from him. That's a career high. That was when you were talking about Kawhi, could he become the best player in the game? I said he's an A to an A plus at everything you do on the court, except for playmaking, where he's about a C for his career. 9 assists in that game. He led to a total of 62 points because all 9 assists, you said all 9 were on?
All 9.
Were on threes.
On 3 points.
That's insane. So he was unbelievable. He's the guy that you've been saying he is all year long.
I know the people really close to Kawhi. Like, this is more than just basketball with him, because if you look at it, we hadn't had a top 5 player that had fallen out of graces with the public as fast in the way Kawhi did. The Kawhi that we see in this interview, this is the Kawhi that we loved in San Antonio. But most of the general public, most of the media, decided in this dispute with Kawhi and the organization, they decided to take San Antonio's side without knowing all the information. They let a couple reports saying that Kawhi didn't want to play, that he was healthier and he was leading on. Tony Parker saying my quad injury was worse than Kawhi's. Man, Kawhi, there's no player that has turned it around more than Kawhi Leonard. And to see him get injured in game number 3, because that was when the series changed. When Nick Nurse, he's made some great adjustments. Danny Green with a quick trigger, he had to do that because he was awful in the first 4 games. But him deciding, 2 games we're down, I'm going to put my best player on your best player. Kawhi gets injured early in that game, but he has outplayed Giannis. He has put his chest on Giannis the last three games, and the totality of it leads to Giannis turning the ball over, Giannis not being comfortable at the free throw line, but Kawhi has made it tough on him. Kawhi scored 35 points. People know that. There are other starters, the four, they scored 35 points themselves. So him, Van Fleet, and their defense collectively, that's how they win on the road in game number five, Jenna.
Sarah, the more success that Kawhi is finding in Toronto, are we starting to see maybe a little more of an opening that he might actually stay there?
I've always thought that. I mean, in who knows what's going to happen. I'm not sure Kawhi is even decided yet, and I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the season plays out. But I think Toronto has done everything they could possibly do to make Kawhi feel comfortable, whether it's from the medical staff, from how Nick Nurse has given him so much authority in the minutes that he wants, how he goes about through the season. There's a great level of comfort. So now you
add he's been playing
this winning aspect, the team around him, and, you know, with Kawhi, and real quick, CeCe, before, the things that he does, there's often people talk about with point guards, and it's just because you're a ball handler, just because you can handle the ball doesn't mean you're a point guard. His feel for the game and his understanding, to your point about the assists, he understands the flow of the game and what's needed where. And that's one of the adjustments Nick Nurse made. Milwaukee kept taking away his right. They were trying to force him left. What does he do? He puts him on the right side of the floor so that he get right into the middle of the floor. And Kawhi knows exactly how to find his teammates, where they're going to be, who's the next pass away. And I think they've all collectively, their level of confidence has been elevated because of the personality of Kawhi, because of the way Kawhi acts. And so, yeah, to me, it's going to be interesting to see, because I think there's a lot of moving parts, but Toronto has done everything they can.
I think you make a great point as far as the medical staff. They hired someone specifically who Kawhi wanted to be able to work with, and they've had great success. Someone there on the staff who works with the team, very, very familiar with Kawhi. Bringing Danny Green over was very, very important because Kawhi doesn't have a lot of friends. It's not as if he's not friendly, but that made him more comfortable in the transition. A few things you should watch, and this is something he never had in San Antonio. Nick Nurse went to him before the game and told him, because the one thing I missed out on yesterday not reporting was, behind the scenes, Kawhi was feeling a little bit better after game number four. Even though he had a little setback, started cramping up a little bit late in the game, he was feeling better. Nick Nurse told Kawhi Leonard, take over the game. He has never been told that in San Antonio. So not only have they done things from a medical standpoint, not only from a teammate standpoint, my question is right now with Kawhi Leonard in the basketball world watching him, would another free agent come to Toronto and join him? Because who wouldn't want him as a teammate? You hear the sound bites after the game? You hear him in at the podium after the game? Who wouldn't want that guy as a teammate? So what they've done, they put themselves in position that someone's going to have to knock them off, and that being the Clippers or the Knicks. I believe it's a three-horse race. Kawhi is a guy who's loyal. You know, he likes loyalty. But Toronto and what they've done, and Nick Nurse, the last thing I'm going to say, I didn't know if someone else could grow Kawhi's game after what he went through with Popovich. But the reason why he wasn't a great playmaker in San Antonio was because the offense, it wasn't called for him to be a playmaker. Nick Nurse has made Kawhi better. He's put him in better positions that he can evolve as the superstar that he is. So, yeah, right now, if there is a favorite, it's got to be Toronto.
And the one other thing that he's put himself in position for, and the team has put themselves in position for, even though they rested him for 22 games, if they could win game six or game seven, the NBA Finals start in Toronto. They also have home court over the Golden State Warriors. Despite doing the load management thing, that might have made them punt on the one seed in the East, but not the one seed against whomever was going to come out of the West. That could be enormous as well. And these more moments, the more moments you have of great memories, of course, the more likely you are to stay. Got one more win to get there.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.